Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Admiral Paul Zeekompt, 25th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Don Fenhagen.
So there's a constant struggle to achieve a proper balance between the demands of today's mission while at the same time planning to effectively meet tomorrow's strategic and operational requirements. If you received a blank check for something to spend money on and future needs in the future, so 5-10 years down the road, what do you think those future technologies are that you would like to invest in for the United States Coast Guard?
Some of it's high tech, some of it's low tech, Don. On the low tech side, we have about a $1 billion backlog in our shore infrastructure. Some of this is housing. We don't have enough child care facilities for our folks. I said, well, that's pretty low-tech stuff. Well, I have search and rescue stations right now where those crews, if they're not out doing search and rescue, they're literally out there pounding shingles into the roof to keep 100-year-old infrastructure watertight. Yeah, we need to demonstrate to our people that, you know, quality of life is an important aspect as well. When it comes to leveraging technology, don't go it alone. You know, work across, in our case, the Department of Homeland Security's. So if, say, for example, we're looking for the state-of-an-art sensor that we want to put in an airplane. Well, we want to make sure it's the same sensor that maybe the Air Force is looking at, or maybe the Navy for submarines, or maybe the CBP. But don't go it alone when it comes to technology. We did that early on with unmanned systems, and we spent a lot of money looking at a helicopter-like device that would launch off one of our – but we were the only ones in that product line at the time. And there were a lot of vendors that couldn't deliver, and finally we said, okay, let's back away from this. Let's let the Navy do their study. We'll put some people on their staff, study this maritime technology, and then maybe we go in together, and then there's economies of scale. Because recognizing that technology, again, going back to Moore's Law, through our acquisition streams, by the time you field it, there's a good likelihood it may be obsolete. So I think in that case, all the more reason to harness, you know, the best of all. I spent a lot of time with the think tanks, but more importantly, our national labs, Lincoln Labs, Sandia Labs, a number of others. What technologies are they looking at? Who else is interested? And then we use a whole of government approach of how do we leverage these technologies for the schoolhouse, for the maintenance, when we ultimately field these new technologies. But to say what is that holy grail of technology that's out there, I can't tell you what that is. That's why I said the smartest person in the Coast Guard does not sit behind my desk.
Well, I'm going to keep with the future. So, you know, decades from now, maybe a decade or so, what is the Coast Guard fleet going to look like? And what are some of the key drivers shaping that vision? And then how does collaboration and partnership make you realize that vision?
We're already starting to see some of that right now, Michael. And yeah, I have 22 folks over in the in Saudi Arabia right now that are trying to model themselves after the United States Coast Guard as they look at their maritime equities that are significant. We're in, I say, 7 continents. But when I was at the last International Sea Power Symposium with over 100 maritime nations there, almost each and every one of them, when you say, what is your number one maritime threat? It's really about maritime security. It's about smuggling. Look at the refugee crisis right now. That is really no end in sight in the Aegean and Mediterranean seas. The human trafficking, all of the other illicit activity maritime. So much of this is very Coast Guard-like in terms of what the, you know, the Tier 2 and especially the Tier 3 nations of the world who, one, can't afford a Navy. And heck, why would you want? We have the best Navy in the world, and we always will be in that regard. But many of the near-term threats that many of the maritime nations see are Coast Guard-like. And so I see the Coast Guard as being the global model, if you will, for maritime governance. Our people are great ambassadors in that regard as well. And it goes back to Alexander Hamilton. And I always read this quote. It says, you know, be mindful that we are a nation of free men who are impatient of rude and haughty behavior. So when we're involved in, say, maritime law enforcement, we don't come out there with gun blazing. You know, we use the minimal force necessary to compel compliance. We're actually humanitarian, if you will, in the conduct of our law enforcement operations. And let's face it, there's a lot of scrutiny drawn on any law enforcement in what may be perceived as heavy-handed operations. we've become the global model for maritime security, maritime law enforcement. So I see our role as an instrument of diplomacy growing, especially with maritime, and certainly with a more modernized fleet with the capability to go further. Today, I have to say no to other requests of, can we send Coast Guard cutters to the Mediterranean and help the European Union with their crisis? Do we send Coast Guard cutters to the East and South China Sea to counterbalance some of the aspirations of China in particular with extraterritorial claims? All of those involve an opportunity cost. If I do that, then I can't do this. And what I can't do this is protecting the Florida Straits, the drug transit zones, but our authorities certainly resonate over there. And we have a very open relationship with the China Coast Guard as well. So I see our role as a global leader growing in the next 10 years. Our capability and capacity will grow at the same time. And we are that unique instrument of diplomacy as an armed service of the United States.
So, Admiral, what advice would you give someone who is thinking about a career in public service and perhaps becoming a Coast Guardsman?
I would go down to the waterfront first and talk to one of our junior most people and ask them why they joined the Coast Guard. That's the first start. And then the experience becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'll just share with you a sea story. I was the captain of a patrol boat during the Mariel boat lift back in 1980. Now, I was the second youngest crew member among a crew of 16 on this 95-foot patrol boat. So it wasn't like I was an old salt. But you're still ultimately responsible. And we're running this barrier patrol off the Florida Keys. Nothing's happening. We didn't have intelligence on anything. But I just instinctively said, well, we know they're leaving from Mariel. So let's just head off in that direction and maybe we'll stumble on something. Well, about 70 miles later, we stumble on a boat no longer than 45 feet long with 200 people on it. And we came alongside, and the parents are throwing their babies, 8-10 months old, at my crew. And we're catching them like hay bales because they knew their boat was going to sink, but they at least wanted their infants to arrive in the United States and have a better life. We saved all 200 people. And from that point on, I said, I don't know why, but I was there at the right time, right place. And it always sends a chill up my spine every time I think of that moment, what my crew did. But the fact that these are 200 people that probably would have perished otherwise if we weren't there at the right place, right time. No explanation for it. But from that point on, boy, was I hooked.
Well, sir, thank you for coming in and spending some time with us today. It's a wonderful conversation. But more importantly, Don and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Oh, I'm just delighted that this country has allowed me to – this month I'll trip over my 39th year of active duty service. And if someone were to say 39 years ago that you would still be on active duty 39 years from now, I would say you better submit to a urinalysis because that cannot be true.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with Admiral Paul Zeecompt, 25th Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. My co-host from IBM has been Don Fanhagen. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.